My name is Sandy Adamidis, the social media director for the Page International Screenwriting Awards, and your host for The Writer's Hangout, a podcast that celebrates the many stages of writing, from inspiration to the first draft, revising, getting a project made, and everything in between. We'll talk to the best and the brightest in the entertainment industry and create a space where you can hang out, learn from the pros, and have fun. Hi, I'm Sandy Adamidis.
I'm Terry Sampson.
It's a special day today, Terry.
Yes, it is.
It's Mother's Day.
All ye mothers, congratulations. Everybody loves you.
Yes. Yeah. We're Sharon.
She's in Albuquerque. She's working on a show in the costume department, and they shipped her out there for a week to help close up the show.
Oh, cool.
And so it's been unique because I don't think we've been apart since people decided to have a pandemic. And by the way, who decided this pandemic thing? Because I have things to say about that.
Doesn't the pandemic feel like it happened just yesterday and 38 years ago?
Yes, there's that. It is a funny thing because in your brain, you'll be reminded, hey, people are still getting sick.
Yes.
And it jerks you back to that thing when your mind has already went on and said, that was 38 years ago.
Let it go.
Get out of town.
I was just thinking yesterday, I spent 2 years in my apartment.
It's a lovely place, though.
I don't think I could ever explain that to somebody 20 years from now. That's what we went through.
Yeah, you'll get some snide remarks like, hey, why not get out of the house once in a while?
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now we know why you're like you are, Great Aunt Sandy. Don't go over to Great Aunt Sandy. She's going to tell you about the pandemic. I don't know why my great niece or nephew talks like that.
Why they'd have such a low voice. Yeah. I know. It is weird.
Okay. Mother's Day was recognized by Congress in 1914. And as early as 1909, in films like D.W. Griffith's I Did It, Mama, followed by The Eternal Mother in 1912 and His Mother's Son in 1913. The prevailing images of mothers were noble, wise, indulgent, self-sacrificing. There was a lot of white, gauzy dresses,
angelic,
a lot of clutching hands to the chest.
Especially in the silence.
Yes. Now, during the Great Depression, we had Louise Rayner in The Good Earth, 1937, and 1940s, Jane Darwell in The Grapes of Wrath. Mothers were portrayed as struggling for their kids. Would you say?
Sure.
Yeah. Not every movie, but that was very prevalent, kind of gave us an image of what moms were supposed to be like.
Right.
During World War II, the film industry portrayed the idolization versions of stay-at-home mothers, such as Greer Garson's character in Mrs. Miniver.
Okay.
That was 1942, and Claudette Colbert in Since You Went Away. Then there's this kind of a subcategory that I adore. The mother must sacrifice so her children can have a better life.
Right.
I love those movies.
Okay.
Stella Dallas.
Okay.
Okay, 1937, Barbara Stanwyck, an ambitious mother who loves her daughter, realizes her lower class behavior is holding back her daughter's social and personal growth. And in an effort to help her daughter achieve happiness and success, she sends her to live with her wealthy husband's new family and marry into high society. The screenplay was by Sarah Mason and Victor Herman, based on Higgins Prouty's 1923 novel of the same name. I can't remember if it's in the Barbara Stanwyck version or the 80s version. Bette Midler played Stella Dallas. But you basically see the daughter inside the big house at a party, and Barbara Stanwyck is like outside in the cold.
The cold in the bushes, not rejected by life.
Rejected by life. Yeah. But the daughter is inside.
Shining brightly.
Yes.
Surrounded by everything anybody would ever want.
And I guess also Mildred Pierce would be a good example of that, where one of my favorite memes for Mother's Day is when she slaps Vita. Vita is her daughter, and she makes pies. She worked really hard and made a name for herself.
In the pie-making business?
In the pie-making, yes, yes.
God bless her.
And that's Joan Crawford, of course. Uh-huh. Just Mildred Pierce, just amazing. Then I think the 50s gets led by James Cagney in White Heat. He's a gangster who is obsessed with his mother.
Right.
And he has these excruciating migraines that only the mother can soothe, if I remember correctly. And I think he sits on her lap while she's soothing, but I can't remember. But he has a girlfriend, mob girl, and I think the mother and the mob girl go at it. Like
I'm writing this movie down. I have not seen it. I will see it 10 minutes after you leave here.
Okay, great. So good. And at the very end, I won't do the spoiler now, but there's a great last line. And if you do see it, I would like you to recreate it for us on the podcast next time we get together. Okay. So this leads into the whole 50s of moms aren't necessarily the comforting, soft, encouraging women. They're the cause of problems, like Psycho.
Oh.
The Maturing Candidate.
Right.
They're strong women who ruin their sons, basically. Yeah. In the 70s, we start to move away from traditional stuff. And one of my favorites is The Unmarried Woman with Jill Clayburgh. And it's written and directed by Paul Mazursky. Jill is this New Yorker, and her husband decides to end their marriage, and he takes up with a younger woman. And Jill is hurt, and she's angry, and you see all that messiness. And one of the things I like about it, I don't believe at any moment does she get a makeover. She doesn't walk into a department store.
She didn't do that part.
No, no.
It was early. It was the 70s.
It was the 70s, and she just starts to enjoy her freedom. She becomes involved with Alan Bates, who plays a painter. And he doesn't just paint. He's one of those painters that lives in a loft, and it's gigantic
like a gymnasium.
Easels. Yeah. Yes, very sexy. And then the rest, everybody else can catch up with. That's just kind of like the earlier version of mothers in film. And who, do you have a favorite mom or a moment or a movie?
I do. I like the storyline in which you get the truly amazing, essential part of motherhood that I just think is extraordinary because it's just different than anything else. Remember, women are born as kids, and motherhood changes them so drastic, more than anything else. And it's because they feel they have a bigger purpose to add into their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're still on the same course they want to be, but a lot of this natural mothering instinct becomes a part of them.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it's great. And so my favorites are from Diane Keaton and Baby Boom.
Terry, get out of town.
I will leave as soon as I can.
Did you know that is probably at the top of my list of favorites?
It's a great movie.
And tell me why you love it.
Well, I knew a lot of women in college who had their sights set on corporate businesses, most of them.
Mm.
You know, and I'm not in college for nothing.
This is the 80s.
Yeah. This is, the sure, let's
place,
say that.
No, I'm saying the movie takes place in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, there it goes.
And that was getting away from traditional roles, like
yes.
I was just saying.
Put it on your shoulder pads and get out there.
Shoulder pads.
There, yeah.
Yeah.
And get out there and do something. So she was all about her career. And then a baby comes along. And there's
Harold
just,
Ramis takes off.
Yeah. Harold just leaves.
Is it like a little wave?
Yeah. And the greatness of this is, though, she takes, you can see, there's at least two scenes, but the one in my mind is there's a point in which she takes a look at the little face that isn't saying anything, just looking at her. And that was the deal. That deal was now sealed.
Yeah.
The deal was sealed.
That baby is perhaps the most gorgeous baby I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And it could have been in the moment where, fast forward, you don't want any spoiler words. But it's not her baby. Right. She basically gets custody of the baby from relatives that died. She didn't even know them. The baby just shows up.
Right.
And she decides to give it up for adoption. And she is handing the baby off to the couple. And the mom is just like very happy to have the little baby girl in her arms. And the dad's like, don't fuss over it too much. We got to get it working on the farm. Basically.
That's right.
And so she takes the baby back.
Right.
And then when they're outside, she looks at the baby and says, don't expect too much.
Yeah. And there's that. And then there's the reward for making something as important to you as yourself.
Yes.
And I believe life does this often. I really do. I think sometimes when you step out of your goals and you do something for reasons that are more pure and unstoppable, and you jump on the bandwagon, wonderful things happen. And that's what happened to her. She embraced the baby, started her own business.
Yes.
It was just great. Everything about it.
So good.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
Forrest Gump with Sally Fields. The beautiful thing about, I see that my son has limitations, but you don't know the beauty in him. It's that cool.
Mine is a little rougher. My favorite mom is Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
In Aliens, written by James Cameron.
Right.
And Walter Hill, directed by James Cameron, starring Sigourney Weaver and Michael Biehn. Famous line, get away from her, you bitch. Coolest quote in the world. The queen alien has just torn Bishop apart, Lance Henriksen, and went after Newt, the little girl. And, you know, Newt's cowering. And I think this is how the scene goes. And you hear the power loader, boom, 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 which was basically, what are those transformers with a person inside?
Yeah, yeah.
And you turn and it's Sigourney Weaver in the power loader.
Yeah.
So it's a level playing field because they're going to fight to the death.
By the way, if you haven't gotten your mom something, get her one of those power loader things.
Yes.
That'd be great.
I would love
They'd
one
love
of those.
Those. Yeah.
Now, I came across a discussion on Reddit that was kind of interesting, and I just wanted to discuss it with you.
Okay.
Because this is Reddit, there's not a lot of punctuation, or you can't tell if it's a statement or a question or exactly what's going on, but this isn't a discussion forum. My mother forgot to read my screenplay I spent hundreds of hours on. What would you say to that person? So I think basically they're saying, I gave my mom my screenplay. I worked really hard on it and she hasn't read it.
Right. Well, I would take a step back and before I ask my mom to read it, I would say that you need to learn the rule of expecting somebody who loves you to read a script of yours. It's a funny, weird little thing. Now, I break the rule in one case, and that is I make my daughter, who I paid for her UCLA English degree, I make her read my stuff so that she can correct the things.
Excellent.
And she does.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That is the best use.
I know. It's fantastic. Cool. I never ask her about it.
Mm-hmm.
I literally have
just do the editing.
Yeah, I just say, take a look at it and see what. And I said, obviously, if there's a huge flaw, if you see a huge hole, go ahead.
What if your mom read it, didn't like it? You're putting her in a very bad position.
Both my parents were alive when I started writing songs. And my dad, he would write specific things about, he would say, this line is so great because you did this, this, and this to set it up. Because he was at that level. So my mom did not have any of that stuff. So she would say, I just love it. Right? They just say that.
Yeah, I don't think I've given any family member anything to read, except once my brother-in-law did ask for one of something, a pilot that I wrote, and he never got back to me.
He's still thinking about it.
It's been about 15 years.
He hasn't greenlit it yet.
Yeah.
But he's right on the...
But, you know, I just let that go because especially people who don't read scripts for a living, I just don't expect... Mm-hmm. them to read things. Now, here's some of the comments. This is what Ryan Rosenblum said. I hear you and feel your pain, but most people, even in the industry, don't read screenplays, even if they say they're going to. It sucks every time, but it's worth learning the feeling because it never fully stops. Ryan has a really rosy outlook on life, but Ryan's right. I guess if you're going to start learning rejection, is it good to learn it from your mom? That's kind of painful, right?
Right. If you have something that you think is great, like an idea of it, and you can spout out your idea in like 4 minutes, do that to mom.
Yeah.
Because they'll go, hey, that sounds pretty good.
Can I practice my pitch?
Yeah.
Do you think this line of dialogue is realistic?
Yes.
I have a mother in my script. I would like to sit down and talk to you about a couple
of things. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
And then say, you'll need to make me pie. I might feel bad later. And that will take care of all the bad feelings.
Pie takes care of everything.
It does.
This is what Merrickson said. This might sound sort of callous to your situation, but a screenplay is probably not the best medium for that kind of thing unless the reader is a person who is very interested in screenplays. Most average people can't stand the format. We kind of say the same thing.
Yeah.
Get her interested, but don't make her read 100 and we don't even know what draft this is, 30 pages of maybe your first draft. Wow, that's a lot to ask of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Script Lurker said, I lost my mom at age 64 last year. I wouldn't put that kind of pressure and expectation on your relationship with her. If she reads it, great. If she doesn't, I don't think you should hold it against her. Maybe you can find another way to bond with her that she's more into than your pursuit of screenwriting. Our parents are only with us a short time on this earth. Try to cherish it. I hope you can find a way to move on from this. Keep writing. Wishing you luck.
Yeah.
I'm with Script Lurker's a pretty cool person.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. And this one was deleted, so there's no name, but the comment was still there. Your mom is not going to give you good feedback anyway. LOL.
Good point.
Yeah, but I'm a little, that's kind of a little just like, my mom, she doesn't know what I'm doing. I'm so cool. I'm 24 and I take drugs.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Your mom's got insights.
Right.
That's a little harsh. But I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, you think of it just as in she's not in the business.
Right.
But it doesn't mean she's not in the business of life. I gathered 3 quotes by Nora Ephron, and would you read them, please?
Yes, oddly enough, I sound more like Nora than you do. I'm not sure why. Number 1, understanding your kids. Parenting meant that whether or not your children understood you, your obligation was to understand them. Understanding was the key to everything. That was from her book, I Feel Bad About My Neck.
I love that one so much.
It's great.
So much about the child.
And by the way, this is another thing between if you're going to switch off the jobs of mother and father, mother is the one who listens better. And the father is going to try to fix whatever they say.
Oh, okay.
And so the mother's thing is to hear them out, and that's its own reward.
Right.
One.
My dad was not a fixer. And I remember I'd moved to Los Angeles and I was working at this production company. And I heard one of the dads on the phone with their daughter. And she was young. She's about 8 years old. And I kept hearing him say to her, honey, please stop crying. I'm going to fix it. Simple words. I'm going to fix it. You have to let me know. I'm going to fix it. I just never grew up that way. My dad did other amazing things, but he wasn't the let's sit down and talk about it. And to all the dads out there, what a lovely thing to say to your kids. What a safe, warm, happy thing to say. I think I would have liked that. Now I'm independent, strong, blah, 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 fill in the blanks. Everybody has their own path. But dads, hug your kids and say, I want to fix it for you.
It's the dad thing to say.
Yeah.
It is good. Nora continues with what being a parent means. She says, a parent is a person who has children. Here's what's involved in being a parent. You love your children. You hang out with them from time to time. You throw balls. You read stories. You make sure they know which utensil is the salad fork. You teach them to say please and thank you. You see that they have an occasional haircut, and you ask them if they did their homework. Beautiful.
What do you think of that as a parent?
Yeah. Yes, it's actually, it's the beauty of structure. in which you do all the things that they need to do. I'm going to do this really quick story. It's the most beautiful. It's one of the beautiful stories of my life. I came back from a meeting for music writing. I was driving along and I stopped at a lot of red lights. And the first one was at a park, and I saw a son and a father playing catch in the park. That was a huge thing for me when I was young. I played catch with my dad, and I realized that's not going to happen. And I said, I have a beautiful daughter. She's super healthy. I'm counting my blessings. You don't get everything you want in this life. And I settled into that, and I made some kind of like transition right there in the car. And I got in the car, and I drove home, and God is my witness. When I got to the house, Madeline says, do you have a second baseball glove? And I said, yes, I do. She goes, I'm thinking of trying out for the softball team. I go, okay. She goes, would you like to play catch in the yard? And I go, yes. I'm not kidding. And the next day, she said, I don't want to do this. Next day, she said, I went to the meeting. I don't think this is for me. And I go, I know why you did it. You don't either. You don't know what it is, but I know why you did it. And it was great.
That's
the
so
honest
cool.
to God truth. I'm not kidding. That is the honest to God truth.
I love that.
Yeah, it's the best. And that is right there. Nora knows about it. You throw balls when you can.
Yep.
So when kids become teenagers, oh, and this is a whole different story. Trust me. When kids become teenagers, when your children are teenagers, it's important to have a dog so that someone in the house is happy to see you. You can try a cat, but the best they'll give you is the stink eye. That's the best they'll hand out of it. That is so true. The change, and you have to roll with that, as Nora has just told you. You just got to roll with it.
Even though I'm not a mother,
yes,
I did get to experience that with my friend's kid. I adore this kid. And then he became a teenager and just stopped talking to me. I felt like I annoyed him with my presence. And now he's back to talking to me.
Of course.
And it was worth the wait.
Yeah. Again, I'm just going to tell you these stories. They're so great. So my daughter was a cheerleader in for a while in high school. And one time it was my turn to drive the kids to some function of sort. So it's Madeline and I in the car alone. And I'm doing my usual shtick with her, trying to make her laugh. That's my thing. And she's laughing and stuff. And then we can see the collection of girls ahead. We're still in the car driving to there. And she turns to me with every bit of certainty in her voice. And she says, the girls are not going to get your jokes. And I said, I know that, sweetheart. Is that the best ever? Right? I'm looking out for you. I might not be a mother, but I'm a pretty lucky dad. And that's a wrap for the Writer's Hangout. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Your positive feedback will help us keep the show going so we can continue bringing you more future episodes. Remember, keep writing. The world needs your stories. The Writer's Hangout is sponsored by the Page International Screenwriting Awards with executive producer Kristen Overn, producers Sandy Adamitis, and myself, Terry Sampson. And our music is composed by Ethan Stoller.